Before we begin today's show, the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney is back Monday through Friday. Be sure to check out his episode with Dr. Anthony Fauci, who talks about the feasibility of having a full baseball season. And Buster also speaks to World Series winning manager Dave Roberts and his counterpart in the other dugout, Rays manager Kevin Cash. That's the Baseball Tonight podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or where you're listening to this podcast. And if you didn't know by now, Stephen A's World streams weekdays on ESPN+, bringing fans Stephen A. Smith's entertaining perspective and deep expertise, along with his signature guests. The best interviews from Stephen A's World are now available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+ right now. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Sunday evening. Just moments after the Brooklyn Nets beat the LA Clippers to finish off their road trip, their Western road trip, 5-0 and sweep LA. Joining us from Staples Center, Section 112, based on the video feed that I'm looking at right now, is down from Oakland, is Mark Spears. This is our first pod this season with somebody in an arena, Spears, so you're breaking new ground.
You know, it's I feel like I'm making history, man.
He's talking through the mask because he's following the protocols. Joining us from Seattle is Kevin the Machine Pelton. How's it going, Pelton?
It's going well. Definitely not as exciting a venue to watch the game as the Staples Center.
Sorry. Well, it depends on what kind of snacks you got.
Yeah,
there's no snacks there.
Yeah, the media food, the ice cream machine at Staples Center is legendary and is been shuttered.
Oh, what about the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches?
Yeah, the whole concept of the vat of peanut butter and jelly, that I think those days are gone. This is way off topic. They put the packaged peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the
Uncrustables.
I think it's the other. This is going to blow all of your mind. It is not the Uncrustables. It's the competing version.
Well, there you go. Okay. Yeah.
But still very good. We're still very happy to have it.
Well, one thing, so you know, what was one of the most popular items in the bubble was actually peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. As Gary Washburn affectionately called it, he's like, you're like having cigarettes in jail. They're just like money. And then anytime you needed a snack, you know, you could pull out one of those PB&Js. I myself was a strawberry guy, but he liked grape.
So you could work a deal. Back in Chicago in the days, two things about going to a Chicago Bulls game, at least for the 18 years I went to Chicago Bulls games, which were a lot of games in Chicago. One, the game notes, the top thing, it always said bullshit. Every time it said bullshit. And then right above their embossed logo of 6-time NBA champs. And then always at Bulls games, there was I want to be very clear here, like a giant, it would be like a salad bowl for a party of 10 of peanut butter and of jelly. And if you wanted to, if you didn't want to eat the meal, you didn't like what was being served, they threw out a vat of jelly and a vat of peanut butter and a loaf of bread, and that was what you could have dinner. And I'm sad to say, I'll bet the days of the communal peanut butter vat are over. So, but we can still get the packaged sandwiches maybe someday. This has been a great start to this podcast. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Listen to Collective. We'll see you next week. No, Spears, the Nets in this game. Now, there was a controversial call at the very end. Kawhi Leonard going in and pushing off on they called him pushing off on Harden, although I felt Harden flopped. But I don't want to talk too much about the game itself. We'll do that in the playoffs. But the Nets have to feel really good, even though they played the Lakers without Anthony Davis. And tonight, Paul George, I think, ran into a minute restriction. They pulled him out with three minutes to go, and he didn't finish. The Nets didn't play without Durant on this trip, so they have to feel really good about where they are as a team. 6 straight wins, 5-0 on this West Coast trip.
I mean, they should be ecstatic. I mean, Durant misses, what, half of this, and this is the result? I got to see them play at a full strength against Golden State, was at that game, and they just look like, you know, perhaps the best team in the NBA. one thing that I saw today was also really encouraging, and I think we talked about him in previous weeks, was, you know, DeAndre Jordan won him the game at the end. He looked great. He rebounded the ball. He blocked shots. He had a season high 4 blocked shots. And if he could give him that extra boost, I think that helps a lot, because as we talked about before, you losing Jared Allen's rebounding, losing his shot blocking, you know, was a tremendous loss for this offensively gifted team. And that, to me, still is my biggest worry for them, is them from a defensive standpoint. But for them to come out west and do what they did with, you know, just a part-time Kevin Durant was, I think, a huge boost of morale for the Brooklyn Nets.
Pelton, their defense has been improving ever since they started to go to a full switch everything defense. And I'll talk about it in a minute, but I know you've written about them recently. To me, especially watching tonight very closely, I did watch tonight's game very closely, their cohesion at both ends is rapidly improving, which you'd expect in a new team, but they still haven't had that much time together.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive the way they came together on this trip, like Mark said. And the switching has been kind of a gradual thing over time. They started the season switching a relatively average rate, started switching more frequently when they made the Harden trade, which makes sense because that's usually how he's best and been deployed defensively, and then really took it to another level on this trip. And it'll be interesting to see the numbers for tonight's game when those are available from the Second Spectrum tracking. But, you know, I think they showed enough defensively on this road trip that I think the combination of how well they played without Durant, the fact that the path in the Eastern Conference looks relatively cleaner to get to the finals than it does in the West, especially for the Clippers and Lakers, now that they're looking at probably being in the 2 and 3 spots, I think at this point, I feel like they're the favorites.
We're not the first to say that. So guys, earlier this week, our all-star voting was due. The media makes up 25% of the vote for the all-star starters. And, you know, and anybody who's talked about it at all has talked about how the real difficult decisions was the guard spots in both leagues, Lillard and Doncic, which we're going to talk about Lillard in a minute. The other one was in, what do you do with the second guard spot? Bradley Beal was, you know, pretty easy call, but what do you do with the second guard spot? And guys, I put James Harden on my ballot. Now, he did not get elected. He'll be elected by the coaches, I'm sure. And anybody who put Jaylen Brown, I wouldn't have a problem with. Kyrie got voted in by the fans, essentially. He finished 4th in the media vote. But, you know, I'm not going to quibble with anybody on Kyrie. But I voted for James Harden. And the reason I did was because I have been so impressed with the way he has moderated his game and been so patient since the trade. And I know that he got what he wanted and he was coming and trying to fit in, but you know, he's an MVP. He doesn't, you know, really owe anybody anything. And even especially since Harden or since Durant has been hurt, he has shown such finesse and particularly, really, I only care with one person, and that's with Kyrie. He has allowed Kyrie to be Kyrie. He has been aware that the Kyrie was the guy whose role was threatened the most. And from the first game they played together in Cleveland, those first two games, I remember talking on this podcast about how I felt like his overall shots had really fell. He let Kyrie sort of control the ball a little bit. And then Kyrie sort of after a couple of weeks said, you know what, you should be the point guard because he's averaging like 15 assists a game or whatever. His, you know, whatever he said, you know, whatever happened to get out of Houston, it happened. Like, I mean, I thought it was a move to go to those clubs or whatever during COVID. I thought he deserved the penalty that he got, although he avoided having to write the check like Kyrie did. I did not, I mean, he was obviously trying to make himself a pain in the ass and that's to do the trade. You know, whatever. I don't give him any tip of the cap for that. But when he's as a net, I've been extremely impressed with him. And I put him on my all-star team. And I thought in this game tonight, he yielded to Kyrie down the stretch. And by the way, I don't even think it was the right decision necessarily because Kyrie, this game, the Nets had the lead the most of the game. And then they actually gave up the lead and it was tied in the last minute. And it was, the reason was, is because Kyrie was chucking. He went 2 of 9 in the fourth quarter. 0-4 on threes. Just took some wild shots in my view. But Harden, when he needed to, got it done. Scored 9 points in the fourth. I think he had 35 for the game. Spears, I have been extremely impressed with James Harden and specifically James Harden's handling of Kyrie. And I think it's a big reason why the Nets have gotten traction with this team so fast.
Well, I think he's playing the best basketball of his career. I've seen that guy we saw in Houston. I actually first saw it down the street from here in the Drew League. And just that shoot everything, forget about whoever else is on the court player. And he certainly is certainly talented enough to score a will, to do whatever he wants offensively. But he's a gifted passer. He's a gifted point guard when he wants to be point guard. And when he came, I thought that it was best to have him with the ball in his hands. You know, Kyrie's a two. He's like Steph Curry. He's a two. You know, we know what Kevin Durant is. So I just thought he would be the best facilitating the offense. And it took him to have two future Hall of Famers to, I think, be comfortable doing that. And it has made him look great. This is, to me, what I always hoped he could be, what I always wanted to see him be as a player. The way I thought he could have potentially lifted the Rockets to the championship. I wish he would have played this way in Houston. I think perhaps there might have been some different results, but he's finally playing this way now. And hopefully for him, he realizes that this style of play is, to me, how he not only is best for him, but the best finally for his team.
So, Pelton, Harden is averaging six and a half free throws a game as a Net. He averaged 12 free throws a game last year as a Rocket, half as much. Now, some of it is because his usage is down a little bit, but I also feel like he's not spending a lot of time just hunting for fouls. And, I mean, maybe that's a result of, look, I got Durant and Kyrie here. I can share the ball. But, I think that's also been a factor as well.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You even look at these last four games here since Durant went out of the lineup. He's averaged 4.3 assists as he's averaged 27.3 or 4.3 free throw attempts, I should say, as he's averaged 27 points and 13 assists in that stretch. So it's a different style of play in many ways from him, and a more aesthetically pleasing one, I think you'd have to say. But yeah, I also voted for Harden as one of my starters. I went with Harden and Kyrie. I went with both the Nets guards. Mm-hmm. And a night like this is why, I mean, you know, I understand.
Kyrie had some great. He was bad at the end of the fourth. He had some special moments throughout the game, though, for sure.
Right, and I understand if media members wanted to hold it against him the way he left Houston, but I feel like when we get to the end of the season, that's going to be a pretty distant memory, and what we're mostly going to remember is what he's doing right now in Brooklyn.
Yeah. So one thing that's happening, and I saw this, and the Clippers had a really nice win over the Jazz on Friday. They played the Jazz twice this last week. Kawhi and Paul George missed one of the games. The Jazz won. They came back, had their full team, played the Jazz. Mike Conley was back. Terrific game, but the Clippers won, so it was a good win for them. That they moved into second with the Lakers, struggling without AD. They moved into second place in the West. In this game, though, I felt that the switching defense caused the Clippers to get into some isolation basketball, which is old as time. When you play a team that switches, it gets you to hunt mismatches, and you tend to play more one-on-one. If they were preparing for a playoff series against the Nets, they would probably have some actions to do that. You know, the way I think you beat the Nets is make them work on defense. They just want to get – a lot of times they will fall into the trap of just give me the ball back because they're so great on offense. The Clippers let them off the hook of that a lot, and I think maybe the game plans or, you know, whatever are behind a little bit because you can't really prepare. So, you know, in a playoff series, I think it would be different. But the switching defense has helped them improve, and Bruce Brown, who's moved into the starting lineup, helps them because they're versatile. Jeff Green is versatile in the switch defense, and they've got this incredible weapon in Joe Harris, who came in, I don't know where he's at right now, but he came into the night shooting 51% on threes. And nobody mentions that guy, but when you've got three of the greatest isolation players in the history of the game, and I don't just say that in passing, I really mean that. I'm not going to rank them or whatever. You got a guy who can lead the league in three-point shooting, or he's got to be in the top three. It's a huge weapon. And so, I was skeptical about the Nets being a championship level team because of their defensive issues. But as I've watched them, I've become more and more convinced that they could do it, Spears. And I'm in agreement with you. I think Harden is a big part of it. And I think they have an MVP candidate who's going to come back. And if Durant stays healthy, the guy can be an ultimate difference maker of all time.
And can you guys excuse my ignorance here, but I had no idea who the hell Bruce Brown Jr. is to the season. Like, who is he? Like, this guy just comes out of nowhere, and he looks like, somebody told me, he looks like if you had to create my player, if my player just came and started playing in the NBA, that's what he would look like, Bruce Brown. Okay. You know, and all he does is just basically hangs out under the basket as they, you know, worry about their three big time scores and makes these bunnies. He just makes bunnies all the time, and he plays tough, and he's like starting fights with Paul George, and who is this guy? Where did he come from? But for some reason, he's been this amazing addition. I mean, I don't even know if he was on a team last year. I guess he was.
He was in Detroit.
I never heard of the guy. If he walked down the street, I wouldn't know it was him. You know?
This is a who he played for moment.
Yeah. And he's had a sensational season.
I mean, what he certainly wasn't was a power forward and a pick and roll man in Detroit. Right. I mean, they were basically using him as a point guard at times. So it's incredible what a wildly different role he's playing for Brooklyn. And, you know, I thought of this comparison when they were talking about him during the broadcast tonight. He's sort of their Russell Westbrook in a way. And let me get through this. And that the way that the Rockets last year went small to make up for the fact that Westbrook was a non-shooter and they had him on the court, it's kind of, I think, what Brooklyn has done, where same thing, you put four other shooters out there, it doesn't hurt you as much the fact that he isn't a three-point shooter.
So that trade, well, Sean Marks made the trade in the offseason. They sent a second-round pick. Who was the player that he sent? Do you remember, Pelton?
They cut him.
Musa.
Zanin Musa, yes.
He's already gone. So, and I think they use that second-round pick.
Yeah, he's making $1.6 million.
Yeah, I think they use that second-round pick to help them get Sadiq Bey.
Yeah.
Part of the Kennard deal.
So I got do you care to know, or you want to move on? Because I'll read it to you. It traded, sure. The part of three-team trade, traded by the Pistons to the Nets, Sadiq Bey, Jalen Hands, and Dizon and Musa, and a second-round pick to the Pistons. They also got Jay Scrubb. They traded Jay Scrubb to the Clippers. It's not a good name for a basketball player.
they ended up folding that in with the draft night trade.
Justin Patton, and there's a lot going on in this trade. I'll just stop talking about it.
Interesting because Luke Kennard didn't play in this game. I mean, he's been dealing with an injury, but the fact that the Clippers made that move for him and then he doesn't end up playing in this and Terrence Mann is playing ahead of him is kind of interesting.
Well,
although Landry Shamet, didn't make a big impact either. Yeah. He went 1-7-3.
The Luke Kennard, they trade for Luke Kennard. This is, we're going off script here, but they trade for Luke Kennard because they wanted a shooter. The reason the Pistons traded him was because they didn't want to pay him because they're worried about his knee. The Clippers pay him, I think it's $56 million guaranteed, and he's already got knee problems. Now, for all I know, his knee will be fine, and he'll be raining in threes in the playoffs, and they'll laugh all the way to the title. But I'm just saying, Luke Kennard got traded because they were worried about his knee.
But Brian, listen, this dude is the starting for this team. He's making 1.6.
Well, I mean, that's what you got to do. Like, and really, that's what Sean Marks now has to do for the rest of the season. I know they've signed some guys. You know,
I think the assistant coaches of the Nets make more money than Brown does.
I have no idea what D'Antoni's making, but I'll bet it's good. I know that they signed Andre Roberson, they signed Iman Shumpert, you know, those guys are on non-guaranteed contracts. They still have roster moves that they need to make, and I don't think you're going to go out there and acquire an all-star, okay? But, you know, this is the kind of moves along the edge that you have to make if you're a championship team, and you have to make a championship team that has three max players on the roster. And so I don't know if Bruce Brown is going to be able to continue to succeed in this role, but the move that they made and, you know, Steve Nash, you know, going under the hood and trying to figure out the formula that works. I still think they are still susceptible defensively. Because once you have a game plan, they can take advantage. And one of the reasons why, like, you know, you mentioned earlier, DeAndre Jordan had a great game tonight. He was able to finish the game. You can attack him. I don't want to talk too much about the pick and roll, but I still think they're susceptible, but they have improved. And I actually think the guy that's going to have to come around is Kyrie. You know, Kyrie is going to have to give the ball up a little bit. The ball, frankly, tonight needed to be in Harden's hands down the stretch. And it was in Kyrie's hands for the most part. And they almost lost the game because of it. They had a lead and they lost it. Kyrie, I think he missed his last five shots. He took a couple of wild shots. Now, I know he makes them. I actually think in watching the Nets, and people who have watched the Nets more than me can push back on me, that's fine. I think the guy who's going to have to keep yielding is Kyrie. Now, Kyrie, if he was here, he'd probably say a lot of things to me. But he might say, well, I already handed off the point guard duties to Harden. That was my give. And I would say, okay, yeah, but that was going to happen one way or another. But I they almost lost this game tonight because of Kyrie, but they didn't. And Kyrie scoring throughout the middle of the game kept them ahead. And so, Pelton, do you like them as the East favorite right now?
I do. I mean, we still need to see it from Milwaukee in the playoffs. They've gone through a rocky patch here where I think their lack of depth has been kind of exposed a little bit with Drew Holiday's absence. And Philadelphia, I think, is going to cool after this hot start. You know, I'm not convinced that they're going to finish number one in the East. I think Brooklyn's got a good chance to have home court advantage throughout the playoffs, whatever that means.
Are there only three East teams over 500 right now?
Toronto, I think Indiana might be a game over.
Okay, Toronto had a nice win in Philly. Or no,
yeah. Toronto 16 and 15.
Okay, Toronto just went over. Boston, watch out
Boston,
for Toronto.
It's 500. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Jeez.
But the other thing we should mention, by the way, from tonight's game is Jeff Green went down after that screen from Patrick Beverley, and they need him to be all right, because speaking of guys who are contributing while making $1.6 million, Jeff Green is playing a huge role for this team.
That's true. Yeah. Well, health is important for any team, just as the Lakers. And Spears, you like them to win the East?
I do. I mean, I think over the next couple of days, they're going to be in the top spot. And I don't see them giving up, because even when the thing that's impressive about them is, even when the big three don't play together, if as long as two of them are on the floor, they can win, and they do win. And so they have the ability to give each one of those guys a night off when they need it. So I think it's going to help all three of those guys kind of like stay healthy and get the rest they need and going into the postseason.
Well, we still don't know the second half of the schedule, so I don't know when we're going to see 76ers-Nets games, although I would imagine that they're going to be highly national television, because Embiid can just destroy them at times, but they may be able to survive Embiid, averaging 38 points or whatever, because the scoring isn't going to be an issue and they'll give enough problems at the other end. That's going to be a huge thing. By the way, the second half schedule is supposed to be released to the teams this week. I think Woj and Zach Lowe reported on that. In talking to some teams, they are bracing themselves for the worst schedule they've ever seen. All kinds of five games in seven nights, all kinds of strange road trips. Where you're playing East and West in the same road trip, where you may start a road trip in the East, go to the West and come back East or whatever, because filling up getting 72 games in for all these teams, not only with all the COVID postponements, but recently a bunch of games in Texas have had to have been called off, Dallas and Houston games, because of the winter storms that hit there. Ideally you would play through the All-Star break and that would give you some cushion, but they're not, and fine. But when that schedule comes out, wait till you hear the griping. And they're doing, like I would just say, what about playing before Christmas and playing the All-Star break or the All-Star game? They're doing it to catch as much of the money as they can before it goes out the door. And so I think that's a great point, Spears, because I think there's going to be a lot of games, and this is going to go for every team, where you're just going to have to rest guys. Like, it's not even going to be guys who have injuries. You're just going to look at them and go, we've just played our second 5 and 7 game stretch in this month, and we got to sit this guy down here and there. And I, you know, depth will matter. And, you know, for, you know, the COVID cases are going down in the country, knock on wood, the vaccines are coming, knock on wood, that continues to work. We hope that we don't see COVID breakouts on teams, but now if you have 5 and 7 days and your whole team gets shut down for 7 days, you're maybe missing even more games than you have, that you have to make up. I don't even know if you're going to be able to. So, we'll see about that. But, certainly an impressive performance by the Nets in this game. And I'm not ready to declare anything with the Nets, but I am slowly but surely coming around to them being a, you know, the real freaking deal.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
I also wanted to talk about Dame Lillard. Now, Dame Lillard has had some hot streaks in his career. I don't have all the numbers in front of me. I don't know if he's had hotter streaks than this. It feels like he has. He's had streaks where he's, you know, scored 40 points a whole bunch of times. I'm just going to tell you, since CJ McCollum went down, which was in mid-January, and Dame has missed a game or two in there, but his stats, he is averaging in those games 32 points on 45% shooting overall, which for him, who takes a whole bunch of difficult shots, for example, he takes 12 threes a game in those games. He's shooting 93% at the line. He's averaging 4.2 rebounds a game and 9.1 assists a game, 1.1 steals. I mean, you think about 9 assists and 32 points. You're talking about a guy, and think about how many times he's throwing a pass to a guy who gets fouled. I mean, he's probably accounting for, including the threes, he's probably accounting for between, you know, in the neighborhood of 50 to 60 points a night without Nurkic. Who else is out, Pelton, for them?
CJ, I mean, they've had other guys. You know, Zach Collins hasn't played yet this season. And, yeah. And then a couple, you know, Covington's missed some time in the stretch too.
Luka Doncic, who's having a good year, his team's underachieving. Luka was kind of almost borderline ashamed that he made All-Star starter ahead of Dame. Spears, you go way back with Dame. The guy is just an incredible performer. He is doing it again. His team is playing, you know, great, all things considered. They had a bad loss to the Wizards, who, by the way, have won 4 in a row. We'll keep an eye on them. Had a bad loss to the Wizards on Saturday. But Dame Lillard, it is just a Dame Lillard appreciation moment here. The guy is just amazing. And he keeps doing it year after year, and he's doing it again.
And he never stops finding a chip on his shoulder. That's the thing that's amazing to me. Like, you know, I remember seeing him at Merritt College, which you guys have probably never heard of, in Oakland, you know, when he worked out, which is the most incredible workout I've ever seen.
Why is that?
One, he was in incredible shape, and he was doing this drill where he would shoot a three-pointer and then run to the baseline on the other side, run back and shoot another three-pointer. And it's kind of like he kept crisscrossing from one end of the court to the other, but shooting three-pointers and nailing them, going full speed the whole time. And it was just like several-minute drill where I'm like, okay, he's about to drop dead. He's tired. And he's nailing all these threes. And you had Portland was there. Golden State was there. And there was another team. I can't – maybe the Clippers were there. And so he's doing this, like, full sprint from baseline to the three-point line, three-point shooting thing, nailing everything. And he's from Weber State. Like, how is he not nervous? You know what I mean? Bob Myers was there. And then after he nails about eight threes or whatever, he's sweating profusely, and he just comes down the middle and does a tomahawk dunk. And I was like, oh, my God. I'm like, okay, who is this dude? Because I never even saw him play when he was at Weber. Somebody told me to, and I'm like, this guy's at Weber. Whatever, you know what I mean? And I saw him play, fell in love with his game and his anger and his hunger. And he just never gets satisfied. I mean, he's this, like, dude from East Oakland who wasn't given anything. And just when you think, I'm like, oh, well, you're rookie of the year. You don't have a chip anymore. Yeah, I do. You're All-NBA. Yeah, you know, that's not enough. You're an all-star. No, that's not enough. You know, I want to be in Portland, and I want to win a championship here. And until that happens, I'm going to just keep fighting and clawing. And so you think that when CJ gets hurt and the long list of guys get hurt, that the Blazers will fall apart. But it tells you why he's a great, why he's a future Hall of Famer, why he should be maybe the top guy for MVP right now, because they're like 18-11 with all the, and he's like working with all these young dudes that haven't proven themselves and made them better. You know, like Gary Trent Jr., I mean, and Simons and stuff like that. It's just
amazing. His shots, and it's simple. He takes shots from the logo because that's what it takes for him to get shots off. Like the, you know, he's small. He's a lot of times the smallest guy on the court. And so he's easier to defend. And it's just, you know, it's kind of like Curry. Curry has this incredible freaking handle. But also they run all kinds of stuff for him. But like Curry has to have this incredible handle because it takes so much to get his shot off. Well, Lillard's even smaller, man. And Lillard has developed this incredibly long shot. You know, you talk about him playing angry. I don't know if this is my perception of it or other people could feel differently, especially if he's just ruining your team. I don't have a team, so I don't feel that way. He plays angry, but he doesn't sometimes when guys play angry, it irritates me. Because I'm like, come on, guys.
No, it's like this quiet fury that you can just see it in his eye.
But it doesn't. Yeah. I'm not turned off by it.
Yeah.
I'm energized by it. And, you know, I actually did see him play at Weber State. So I remember I went out to Chicago. I was going out to cover the Heat when I was covering the Heat day to day. And the Heat were beginning a road trip in Portland, a long road trip. And I flew and changed planes in Chicago. And I was at my gate in Chicago getting ready to board the plane. And Gar Forman, the GM of the Bulls, and John Hammond, the GM of the Bucks at the time. Now he's with the Magic. They both show up to get on the plane. It's pretty unusual that you're on a plane with two GMs and also that you're not flying to either of their teams are playing. And I go, what are you guys, you know, doing here? And they're like, oh, we're going to see Dame Lillard play. Or they didn't call him Dame. I think they even said, we're going to see this kid for Weber State. I didn't even know who he was. So we flew out to Portland from Chicago. I was changing planes. And, I get out there and, you should come to the game tonight. So I did. Weber State was playing at the University of Portland.
Oh.
And I apologize. I don't even know if that's in an inner conference. I don't think
it
is.
No, it was Portland State.
Portland State.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. The Vikings.
So I go to Portland State. I don't even remember. I don't even remember the gym.
Well, it's
I don't
like remember. A high school gym. That's why you don't remember.
Yeah. I don't remember it because this is like 2011 maybe. And he put up 40.
And you had no clue who he was when you got on the plane.
Well, when I get to the game, Chad Buchanan, who was the acting GM of the Blazers at the time, there was a scout there that I knew from the Nets who had flown out for the game. And I just remember a few weeks later, the Nets traded their pick. This is, of course, famous. You know, the Nets, this guy, by the way, this wasn't just a scout. It was a front. I won't say who it is because I don't want to put him on the spot or whatever, but it was a front office guy from the Nets who had flown all the way out from the East Coast to watch him. And I went a couple of weeks later when they traded away their pick for Gerald Wallace, and they were like, oh, there's only six guys in this draft. I think there was a top three protected pick, and there's only three guys in this draft we really like. And so, and I was like, well, your scout was sitting there the night he put up 41 or whatever on Portland State. So I don't know if that scouting report got lost on the email back. You know, I didn't know he was going to be like a megastar because, you know, I saw he was small and he was playing against small guys. But I remember the next day, the next morning, you know, Weber State doesn't fly private. They were flying commercial. So they stayed overnight. They didn't go home after the game. And so they were staying in the Marriott where I was staying, and I ran into them in the lobby, and I introduced myself to them, and I said, I'll be seeing you next year.
That's a great story. I didn't know that.
Yeah. But I mean, again, I want to be clear. I wasn't like saying, oh my God, this guy's going to be a Hall of Famer like he is. I mean, I just recognize that as an NBA talent, you know, but he was spectacular that night.
What,
and like, look,
what did he say when you said that to him?
Oh, he was just very polite. You know how he is. Yeah. He was just very polite, you know. I mean, I don't even remember it. You know, he probably got, he's probably, but that was when he was a senior. He was probably getting come up to by everybody. And I wasn't really on TV then. So he probably, you know, when I said I was from ESPN, he probably didn't know who I was. But, you know, the thing about it was, is this guy's playing Weber State out in Portland. And all these guys are flying all the way out there to see him. That's what made me want to go to the game. You know, like if I hear there's a game, you know, it's an off night in Portland. Portland's a great city. You know, I could have other things to do. But the reason I went to the game was because these GMs were hauling their asses out to the West Coast to see this guy play, you know? And so that, you know, not their regional scouts. I'm sure their regional scouts had already seen him and sent him back. I kind of feel like there was even other NBA scouts there that night, but you know, there were definitely three GMs at this game. And so anyway,
better than going to Ogden. They wanted to go to Cafe Dewberry in Portland. That was an excuse. It's always around food with those guys.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Pelton, Spears just talked about Lillard as an MVP candidate. When Tim Bontemps did his straw poll with 100 likely MVP voters 2 weeks ago, I think Damian was 12th. When you look at it, where do you think he is? And his case is being bolstered by the fact that, you know, he's always been disrespected. And, you know, I mean, when is he going to get respected?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of the danger of talking so much about MVP early in the season is that things can change pretty dramatically. I mean, when we were talking about it a month ago, CJ McCollum had been the Blazers' best player over the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season before he got injured. He was really the one who was playing at another level, and Dame was able to take a slight step backward, not a huge one by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, he wasn't playing at that MVP level, and then he's needed to do so much more, you know, during this stretch, as you talked about earlier. And I think if you're going to make the case for Dame as MVP, it's got to be primarily around his clutch performance. I know McMahon isn't giving out the Kones Factor Player of the Week anymore off the pod, but if he was, I think Dame would just be permanently on there right now.
Called the Damian Lillard Factor.
Yeah. This season, in what NBA.com defines as clutch situations, that's inside 5 minutes and 5 points or less is the lead. Either way, 24 of 39, 10 of 17 from three.
You know he's getting swarmed.
24 of 24 on free throws. Oh. since 1996-97, which is when the NBA started tracking this on the NBA Advanced Stats site, there have been two players who have had a season with at least 30 field goal attempts using at least 25% of their team's plays in the clutch, an effective field goal percentage of 70% or better. You'll never get the other one, which was Victor Oladipo, the year that he went down with the quadriceps tendon injury before he was injured. But it's him and Lillard. That's the entire group.
You know, Spears, I mean, you hear about guys wanting to go to big markets, and this is one of the reasons why, although he's signed there long-term, everything, but he is penalized because he plays games that start at 10:30 and he plays in Portland. I mean, if the guy was in New York, he'd be voted in by the fans for sure.
Yeah.
I think the media voted him the number two guard spot. I'm pretty sure the media and the players voted him number two. But the fans had him like fourth or fifth or something.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, Steph Curry and Doncic are like wildly popular. So
I know.
I mean, I don't even know if he was in New York, if there was anything he could do about that. They are, you know, but you know, Dame is he'll be there. And I think ultimately that's all he cares about. He'll be there and be in Atlanta. And he just one of those guys, man, that not only on the court is he amazing, but he's one of the best people I've met off the court too, in terms of what he does, you know, especially for the community in Oakland, what he does in Portland. You know, he does a lot for young kids. There's this, a big festival he does that, you know, was postponed this past year, obviously for obvious reasons. He does a picnic in Oakland every year, and any kid that wants to just show up and see him and take a picture with him can do it. And he said the reason why he does it is he wants kids in his neighborhood to see him, touch him, know that he truly is from there. And he's not going to hide with bodyguards or anything like that. He wants them to be able to know that Damon Lillard is somebody that has success, and that, you know, perhaps it's not basketball, but in him you could see somebody from your neighborhood that is successful and did things the right way.
So before we go, we do have some breaking news that happened in the NBA tonight. Ryan Saunders has been fired, the first coach fired this season, which actually kind of a surprise. Timberwolves lost tonight to the Knicks, which, you know, has a special little insult because Tibbs, everything there, but it's not like it's that big of a surprise. I guess maybe the timing is. Who did they name as coach?
The reports are that they are working to hire Chris Finch.
Okay. So, Dame,
can I say something though?
Yeah.
How does David Vanderpool not get this job?
Well, let me read what Damian Lillard tweeted 2 minutes ago. How in the hell do you not hire David Vanderpool? And he's right there on the bench. He has been in the front office successfully and on the front of a bench for a winning team successfully, and has also played some major role in development of a dominant backcourt. SMDH, shake my damn head. Let me just say that two things. I mean, I just got this news. I have done no reporting on this whatsoever. David Vanderpool was a strong candidate to be hired as the head coach when Gerson Rosas became the general manager before last season. He had an interview, even though Ryan Saunders was in the seat, he had an interview process. David Vanderpool got several interviews, and then he brought Dave Vanderpool onto Ryan Saunders' staff. We sometimes see this in the NBA where a coach who's on a bit of a hot seat has a veteran or an assistant brought in that's preferred by the GM. It doesn't always go this way, but the feeling in the league was that David Vanderpool was sort of the coach in waiting there. And obviously this season hasn't gone that well, but Lillard making his feelings thought, and you, Spears, right off the bat making your feelings thought. So I'm sure this will not be the last we hear about this.
No. I mean, it's disappointing because, you know, I know David real well, and he has certainly done everything the right way. Everything that you want to do, you need to do to get the opportunity. And should have been a head coach already. thought he would have been a head coach already. I just don't get it. I mean, I guess maybe there's more to this story, and I'm a big Gerson fan, so. But I'm just confused by this, man. Like, to me, it just would seem like a no-brainer, and you know what do you have to lose to give him a chance? I'm pretty stunned that that's not a no-brainer, that he gets this opportunity, and I don't know if he resigns, but I actually think he should.
Dame Lillard is speaking for many. I mean, he is very popular amongst players, has a long career, and you know, has interviewed, gosh, Spears, for how many jobs? He's interviewed for a lot of jobs.
Yeah, that's my confusion.
Yeah. You've written and talked about this a lot, about perceived, I don't know, I'll let you describe it how you want to say it, but you've written about this a lot, about how there's an inequity amongst the African-American coaches, head coaches in the league.
Yeah. Obviously, this league is 80% black, if you consider the African players as well. And, you know, but maybe there's seven, I think, black head coaches in the league, which by NFL standards, it sounds amazing. By and NBA, it's still extremely disappointing. You know, I do think you need to hire the best person for the job, but a lot of these NBA coaches that I have talked to, these assistant coaches, and this includes guys in the front office, black front office guys as well, said that no matter what we do, they feel like the rules are always changed. The goalposts are always moved, that no matter what they do in terms of getting the experience they need, it's just not enough. So I'm just this to me, this screams what we've been talking about, because there is a guy in house. It's not like, you know, you're going to go out of house to get this dude. Chris Finch, I mean, you couldn't wait to like just give David a chance for the rest of the season. And then if it didn't work out, I mean, is there more to this story? I don't know, but.
Yeah, I mean, this is all, I mean, we just found out as it was going on.
I mean, whether he's black or green or white, I think he should be really, really upset by this, and he should go.
Yeah, this is what you're talking about, because he's definitely paid his dues. I mean, we're not there, we're not in the locker room, we don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, again, Dame's reaction is exactly the same as yours. And Dame, you know, I didn't say this. One of the reasons Dame is talking, he was in Portland with Dame. I mean, if you know Vanderpool's background, you know that, but not everybody may know that, but
That was the backcourt that Lillard was talking about him developing, was himself and CJ McCollum.
Right. Right.
CJ McCollum tweeted about it as well. CJ said, make it make sense respectfully. And I think that's the thing. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's so unorthodox to hire a coach off another team's staff midseason. My friend Dan Feldman of NBC Sports found an example of it with Phil Johnson going to the Kings in the 80s. But it's not something I can remember, certainly in my time covering the league and even before that, just as a fan.
Well, Finch has been a sort of a guy who has been sort of been one, a guy on short lists. He was in Houston for a while, and it was thought that, you know, he could maybe be a coach there. He's been on the Raptors staff this year, and it is interesting. I mean, I'm not sure who reported, again, we're doing this sort of live, just finding this out. I'm not sure who reported first, but, you know, it sounds like they're hiring him on a multi-year deal. So, like, he is the new head coach, like multi-year head coach. And so, now, I said Houston, that's where Gerson Rosas came from. So there's obviously a connection there. And there was, you know, Gerson obviously had been thinking about this for a while and, you know, made this move and all that stuff. But it's a pretty fascinating development. There will be more in coming days, and I'm sure we will talk about it then. Thank you so much, Pelton and Spears. Spears, I think, especially because you're working overtime at the arena tonight in Staples. Thanks to Troy Farkas for producing. And thanks for listening to The Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you later this week.